This is Vincent Price. Death. Shakespeare called it the undiscovered country from whose bourne no traveler returns. And to this day it remains the ultimate mystery, and certainly the world's most accommodating one-way street. Yet suppose one of us stepped up to eternity's tour window and ordered a round-trip ticket.
Morning, Mr. Beasley. Morning, young man. Lovely day, isn't it?
And lovely flowers you have there, Mrs. Grimshaw.
Oh, azaleas. Courtney's favorite. Wouldn't want him to feel neglected on the day before our reunion.
You know, Mr. Beasley, I've been working at this mausoleum for almost 3 weeks now, and that's the first happy customer I've seen. What's she so cheerful about?
You heard her, Tommy.
Oh, you mean about a reunion or something?
Or something.
She doesn't look that sick.
Well, what's that got to do with it?
Well, she's over there placing those flowers at that crypt, and unless I'm mistaken, that would be this Courtney fella inside that crypt.
Courtney Grimshaw, her late husband.
Okay. Well, so if she's expecting to be reunited tomorrow, then she must be a lot sicker than she looks, or else about to commit suicide.
Well, you've got it all backwards, Tommy. There's going to be a reunion, all right, and it's going to happen right before our eyes. We're going to have us a coming-out party here tomorrow, the likes of which ain't never been seen in this world. You see, her husband is the one who's crossing the Great Divide.
And that's only the beginning. Or perhaps we should call it the second beginning of our story.
Mutual Radio Theater, a new adventure in radio listening. 5 nights of exceptional entertainment every week, brought to you in Elliot Lewis's production of the Mutual Radio Theater. Our story, Death Warmed Over, by Larry Tuvel. Our stars, Mary Jane Croft, Keith Andes, and Elliot Reed.
Till death do us part. The traditional limit of the marriage vow. Yet it doesn't apply in the strange case of Mary Grimshaw, a woman anxious to resume what may well be an unholy matrimony with a husband who's about to return from the limbo of death. To understand their unique relationship, we must turn back the clock 30 years to the day of their wedding.
Oh.
Glad it's over?
Glad to be alone with you.
Mary, don't.
Don't what?
Don't sit so close. You're blocking the rear view mirror. All I can see is your head.
I thought you liked my head.
I love your head, but not in the rear view mirror.
Yes, Dr. Grimshaw. Whatever you say, Dr. Grimshaw. I love you, Dr. Grimshaw. Even if you prefer the scenery to my head. What's that?
My new watch.
What's it trying to tell us?
That it's time for my pill.
Why are we stopping here?
Oh, need a little fresh air. Get away from those gasoline fumes for a few minutes.
Ah, such a pretty spot.
Mm. Do you miss Boston?
Not with you here. Time for another pill?
No. Time for a kiss. Well, what do you think of Mason's Notch, Vermont?
Is this it? Are we there?
Well, don't blink or you might miss it.
I love it, Cord. It's like a picture postcard.
The main drag is down that way. General store, post office, graveyard, everything a person needs. Why, there's even a diner for special occasions.
Where are we stopping?
Behold the Grimshaw Estate. A fitting domicile for the town's new general practitioner. What do you think of your new home, Mrs. Grimshaw?
Oh, Cord. It's beautiful. Oh, but it's so big, it must have cost a fortune.
Didn't cost me a penny. This was the family's vacation home when I was a boy. We spent our summers up here before my folks died. Huh. I was was a happy time. I dreamed of living here someday, for good. I guess some dreams do come true.
How come you never told me about this house?
Well, you never asked. Besides, I've only known you for 3 weeks. There are a lot of things I haven't told you. Time for a kiss.
Yeah, but you can't fool me. It must be time for another pill, too. Oh, how much further? I think I've had it.
We're almost home. Just round the next bend. Now, we've got to get you in better shape. This is the short course. Tomorrow we jog 5 miles.
Tomorrow you jog 5 miles. I read the morning paper and eat my bacon and eggs.
You can see the house now. We're almost there.
Oh, I can't jog another step. You go on. I'll walk the rest of the way. Cord? Cord, what's wrong? What's happened? Gort! Oh, Gort!
Don't cry, Mary.
No.
Please don't cry. I knew this was going to happen. I should have told you, but I couldn't. Mary, I'm dying.
Oh.
And you must listen carefully. Get in touch immediately with my friend, Gordon Cannon. Dr. Cannon. You met him at the wedding. Immediately. He'll know what to do. And he'll explain everything.
No, but
trust him. Do just as he says.
No.
My will is up to date, and everything will be fine for you. Oh, Mary.
Oh.
Mary, wait for me.
Oh, Cord. Cord, please, darling.
Wait for me.
Wait for me. A rather odd instruction from a dying man to his young bride. But then Dr. Courtney Grimshaw is not exactly your run-of-the-mill cadaver. As for poor, sweet, dutiful Mary, her ordeal has only just begun.
Gordon, oh, thank God you're here. How'd you make it so fast?
I had no choice. There isn't a moment to spare. Follow me.
Where are we going?
Downstairs to the basement.
Why are we going into the wine cellar?
Have you seen the wine cellar?
No.
Well, you've never seen a wine cellar like this one.
I can't see a thing.
Yeah. Where is that light switch?
Oh, Gordon, what is this?
Oh, it's nothing, Mary. It's only a mannequin.
But why? What are all these tubes and machines for?
To bring Court back to life.
Gordon, please be serious. This is no time for jokes.
I assure you I'm not joking. It was Court's idea. You know about his parents, how young they died. Well, so did their parents. Congenital heart condition. Court knew he was going to die young, but he couldn't settle for such a short life, so he designed his own resurrection.
You mean Court is actually going to come back to life, to me?
Well, not right away, Mary. Heart transplants aren't perfected yet, but Court and I figured that in another 25 or 30 years, they'd be foolproof. And that's when Court will be brought back.
30 years? I won't be a young woman in 30 years.
Young or old, the question is, do you want to be with your husband again?
Of course I do.
Then we've got a lot of work to do. And we've got to do it fast. Now, it's going to be very difficult and very unpleasant. Are you up to it?
Well, I don't know. What do I have to do?
Well, to begin with, while I prepare this equipment, I want you to go upstairs and get Court's body ready for transfer down here. I want you to massage his chest and to breathe deeply into his mouth. We've got to get his heart and his lungs working again. This machine will take over once we get him down here.
Oh, Gordon, I can't. It's too horrible. You can't ask me to do that.
It's not me that's asking. It's Court.
Oh, I don't know if I can make it. Feels like a ton.
That's what they call a dead weight, Mary. Oh. All right, now, lift him up and on the table. Ready? Okay. Well, now the real work begins. I'll explain it as simply as I can as we go along. Cort is clinically dead, but not biologically. His cells are still alive. Now, what we're going to do first is prevent any further deterioration. And we'll do that with this machine. Oh, there's the switch. Turn it on. Now, this is called a heart-lung resuscitator. What it does is push that piston down on Cort's chest so that his heart is squeezed and starts pumping blood again. There. Yeah, good. Yeah, I think it's working fine. Now, what I want you to do, Mary, is hold Cort's arm while I inject him with this anticoagulant. It's to prevent clotting. Good. Good. Okay, this part is going to be a little rough. We've got to insert this tube into Cort's windpipe so that we can get air into his lungs. Now, that'll be regulated by the machine for every fourth beat of the piston. Mary, are you all right? Mary?
No, I'll be all right. I'm just a little dizzy.
Now, while I adjust the tube, I'd like you to start applying those ice packs to Cort's body, all over the body. We've got to start cooling him off.
Who? What?
Who the hell are you?
Oh, Ambrose is the name. Christian Ambrose of Venable Mortuary and Cemetery. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I heard there was an accident here. I've been pounding on the door.
What makes you think you can walk into someone's house? What do you want anyway? Can't you see we're busy?
Yeah, I can, and this is fantastic. I came here to make funeral arrangements, but if you're doing what I think you're doing...
This is none of your business. We've made arrangements, so please leave.
Well, you're actually attempting suspended animation, aren't you? This is incredible. You know, I've heard of the canon freezing theory, but I never dreamed anyone would attempt it under these primitive conditions. I'd be grateful if you'd let me help.
We don't need your help. Please go before I throw you out.
Oh, well, I'd be of enormous value to your team. You see, I'm a whiz at handling the deceased. You need a professional.
Why would you possibly want to get involved in this?
Oh, well, because ever since I read of the freezing process, I've dreamed of the day to become a reality. Oh, but just put yourself in my shoes for a minute. We mortuary people are treated as if we were parasites, feeding on other people's tragedy and misery. I see this innovation as our last great hope. It makes us the architects of immortality instead of the agents of oblivion. It gives us respectability, prestige.
It's nice to have your endorsement of our project, but we don't need you.
Oh, I think you do. If you look on the floor over there, you'll find the other 50% of your team. She's just collapsed.
Mary.
You tend her. I'll begin icing our friend here. After all, we wouldn't want him running a fever now, would we? Fascinating. Utterly fascinating. Dr. Cannon, you're a genius. But what motivated you to devise this theory?
Our patient. When I first met Grimshaw in med school, I was one of his teachers.
Oh?
He was a good student. Had a life expectancy of about 5 years. I felt he deserved a few more. Or at least seconds.
Yeah. Well, now let's see. We've drained and stored his blood and pumped his veins full of DMSO. I guess we can turn off the heartbeat machine now, right?
Wrong. We've got to circulate that protective solution through his bloodstream. We can turn it off tomorrow. Right now, it's time to apply the slush.
Oh.
In the freezer over there, you'll find a bunch of plastic bags. They contain a slush of dry ice and alcohol. All we have to do is pack the body in those bags, and we'll get his temperature down to minus 79 centigrade. Then, in a few days, we'll go from dry ice to liquid nitrogen and get him down to minus 196. At that point, he'll be in cold storage until whenever we decide to throw him back to life. Oh, here. Put these gloves on before you start handling the dry ice.
Marvelous. Absolutely marvelous.
Mary, what are you doing here? I told you to stay in bed.
I'm better now. Can I help?
Mary, stay out of this. You've had enough trauma today. I don't want you to wind up with a nervous breakdown.
I tell you, I'm all right.
We're finished for the day anyway. Ambrose will be leaving in a minute, but I think I should stay the night. I'm afraid to leave you alone in your condition.
My condition is fine. I'm perfectly capable of staying alone in my house. Besides, you forget. I'm not really alone.
Consider the plight of Mary Grimshaw. A whirlwind courtship of 3 weeks' duration, then the bride of a man who turns out to be fussy, demanding, and before the sheets have even cooled after a night of honeymoon bliss, dead as a doornail. As if that weren't enough excitement, she is then asked to participate in a chilling debate with death, a process that includes such delights as mouth-to-mouth resuscitation with the corpse of her loved one. Is it any wonder that she's cracking under the emotional strain? Against his better judgment, Gordon Cannon has decided to leave Mary alone in her house for the night, even though she seems to regard Courtney's cadaver as company. As the night wears on in this environment ripe with terror, Mary slumbers fitfully between two sets of worlds, the worlds of life and death, of dreams and reality. Only the morbid, maddening rhythm of the heart-lung resuscitator in the basement penetrates the eerie stillness of the house. On the brink of nightmare, the beat of the machine seems to convey a message.
Wait for me. Wait for me.
Lost in this realm of macabre fantasy, Mary is caught up in a chase through a kind of limbo eternity. Her pursuer is a jagged creature of ice that emits a vapor of frost in the manner of a dragon breathing fire. Cornered, she produces a match, strikes it, and holds it up towards the oncoming creature as if holding up a cross to ward off a vampire. Reacting to the flame, the cadaverous creature begins to melt away like so much ice. To Mary's horror, she realizes the creature is Courtney.
Oh, thank God, only a dream. Oh, maybe this is all a dream. Maybe I've only been dreaming about the past 24 hours. Court? Court, tell me you're not dead. Come back to me, my darling. Is that you, Court? Are you calling me? Oh, come to me, my darling. Return to me, Court. Please, don't leave me alone. Don't leave me alone. Off again. Well, at least the storm's passed. It's so still. What a relief. Oh, the machine. My God, the machine stopped. Oh, for how long? Oh, is it too late to save Court? The phone. Where's the phone? I must call Gordon at once. The lights are all out. Dead. Phone is dead. Storm must have knocked out the power. Oh, I must get to Court before it's too late. Oh! Can't see a thing in this darkness. Can't see a thing in here. Where's that machine?
Mary!
Who's there? Is that you, Court? Where are you, Court? Oh! Oh, my God. What have I done?
Mary, are you in there?
Oh.
Mary!
Oh.
Where's that utility switch? Oh. Good God. Mary, are you all right?
I've killed him. I've killed him.
Calm down, Mary. You can't kill a dead man. You've only knocked him over. He's all right. Are you all right? Here. Here, let me Let me get him off you.
Oh, he's so cold. His arm, it's loose.
Yeah, it must have been severed a bit in the fall. He's quite brittle, you know, but don't worry. They'll sew it together when they bring him back.
Oh, he'll never come back. I've destroyed him forever.
Mary, you're hysterical. Please, go back to bed and try to get some sleep. I'll fix things up here and stay the rest of the night in case you need me.
I've killed him. All he wanted was to come back to me, and now I've killed him. Forever and ever.
Well, here's to a job well done.
And here's to Grimshaw. Frozen stiff and ready for recycling. I've quit my job with Venable.
Well, that hardly sounds like a cause for celebration.
Oh, but it is. It is. Bartender, one more here. Oh, Venable was too scared to offend people by taking in Grimshaw. He simply refused to see the business potential of suspended animation. I talked myself blue in the face, but he'd only respond with, "You can't tamper with the master plan." So I quit.
Well, where does that get you? On welfare?
No, not on welfare. As a matter of fact, it could make me a very rich man. You know, I'm planning to open my own small place on the edge of town.
That's just what Mason's notch needs, another mausoleum.
Oh, no, mine's going to be different. Yeah, it'll have a freezer wing, yeah, and the court. And court's going to be my first customer. You know, I can see it now. I'm going to call it the Rip Van Winkle Freezoleum. And the ads will say, "Play it cool. Die now, for later."
Oh, I've got a better one. How about... immortality on the easy layaway plan, huh?
I like it! I like it! The County Mortuary Board will call me an opportunist, of course. They'll pick up the story in Boston. I might even make 60 minutes. They'll come from all over the country to be frozen to death. And you, Cannon, you will be hailed as the founding father of eternal life.
You know what, Ambrose?
Why?
I think you're deaf.
Yeah, but you've got to be a little daffy to become a millionaire.
Who is it?
It's Gordon. Let me in, Mary.
Gordon, you've been drinking.
Yes, and I've been thinking, too.
Thinking about what?
Well, about you. Mary, it's time to give up the ghost. Let's have court buried and forget this whole ugly business.
What do you say?
Mary, life is for the living. Court has gone far enough. He's asking too much of you. He's slowly killing you, too. I want you to forget court and come away with me.
Let go of me.
Mary, this is madness. You can't stay faithful to a dead man. I was wrong. I was crazy to think a thing like this could work. You've got to listen to me before it's too late.
Gordon, you're hurting me. Let go.
Mary, I want you to listen, and listen carefully. I love you, Mary. I won't stand by and let you destroy your life. I won't let you be sentenced to life imprisonment. Come away with me, Mary. I want you to be my wife.
Oh, Gordon.
Say you will.
Gordon, hold me. Hold me tight.
Say you come with me, Mary.
I can't. I can't leave with you.
But why? You must.
Gordon, I'm going to have a child. Courtney's child.
While her husband snoozed for 30 years in icy suspension, Mary Grimshaw, too, remained on hold, the prisoner of a remarkably courageous and unselfish vow. For 30 years, she voluntarily vegetated, rearing her heir, preserving an intact shrine to her quasi-late mate, and generally shaping her madness in a house suspended in time and haunted by the ghost of an illusion. The townspeople chose to regard her not as a madwoman, but rather as a fascinating eccentric. Then finally, the great day dawned. Resurrection Day for eternity's first round-trip passenger. An event of monumental impact, of worldwide attention. Television commentators drooled over the dramatic prospects of this second coming.
Wait, I think this is she arriving now. A hush has fallen over the crowd as the big black limousine pulls over to the curb. It's the Rolls-Royce owned by the proprietor of this world-renowned establishment, Mr. Christian Ambrose. Now, the chauffeur has opened the rear door, and out steps Mr. Ambrose, smiling and radiant on this day, his day of days, too. And now he has extended his arm inside the car. And indeed, out steps the widow, the wife of Courtney Grimshaw. Now, as the crowd presses in for a closer look at the, well, you might say the co-star of this production, or reproduction, if you'll pardon the little joke, she hesitates for a moment. There's a look of panic, or at least perplexity, in her eyes. But now, on the arm of Ambrose, she begins walking toward the main building, ignoring the autograph pads that's being thrust at her by the spectators. She's wearing a bright print lavender dress for this great occasion, looking like the woman of 60 that she is, or perhaps a little bit older than that, after her three-decade ordeal. She's quite wrinkled and gray, as you can see, and obviously overwhelmed by the enormity of the prospect. And now, as Mary Grimshaw disappears into the entrance of the building, our cameras will switch inside to the recovery room, where we understand that Grimshaw is still slumbering after the grueling test of this morning's 3-hour heart transplant surgery. The thaw has also been completed, of course, and we hear that Grimshaw's temperature is up to a perfect 98.6. And now, there you see Grimshaw in his bed as his beloved Mary enters the room. Oops. Her knees seem to buckle as she sees her spouse, but she's caught just in time by one of the nurses in attendance. And now a chair is being placed at the side of the bed for her. And all that remains is for the man in the bed to discard his 30-year-old coma, or whatever you wish to call it, and re-enter the realm of consciousness. And so she waits. She who alone knows what true waiting is. Ladies and gentlemen, did you see that? A faint flutter of the eyelids. The great moment might be at hand. Mary Grimshaw, as you can see, is leaning forward expectantly. His eyes have opened. He's staring directly into the eyes of his wife. But he looks frightened. And now his eyes have closed. Mary's looking at the doctor. The doctor's looking at Mary. The doctor is shrugging. Oh, but wait, Grimshaw's eyes have opened again, and his lips seem to be quivering. Let's pick up the audio. Ladies and gentlemen, we may be about to hear a man's first words after a trip through the frozen eternity of death.
Why is it so damn hot in here?
Hot?
Where am I? What happened?
Oh, it's all right, dear. You died 30 years ago.
I... what?
You died.
I died.
You wanted to die.
I did? Why would I want to do a fool thing like that?
So we could bring you back. You see, dear, we've kept you in the freezer.
In the freezer? I've been in the freezer?
Yes. Until we could thaw you out and give you a nice new heart.
Oh, I'm beginning to remember now. Yes. Yes, my heart. Yes, I remember now. Then you must be...
Yes, dear?
You must be... Oh! Why can't I remember your name?
Oh, that's all right, dear. After all, it has been 30 years.
Well, what is your name, anyway? What is this, a damn quiz show or something?
It's Mary, dear.
Mary, dear. Of course. Mary, dear. It's you. I'm back, then. I've made it.
Mary, dear, come to me. Let me hold you.
And so, as you can see, it is a very intimate moment as our two lovers, separated by an unimaginable gulf for 30 long years, embrace tenderly.
Ow! Ow!
An embrace punctuated by Grimshaw's curious cry of pain. Evidently, there's something wrong with his left shoulder. He seems to be clutching it now. And his wife seems quite upset over the ailment, whatever it is. Perhaps a failure of the socket to thaw properly. Well, at any rate, this is Phelps Mancuso in Mason's Notch, Vermont, returning you now to our studios in New York.
Now close your eyes.
Close my eyes? Why?
You'll see. Notice anything?
I notice a bedroom. Our bedroom, as I recall.
You notice anything different about it?
No.
That's the point. It's exactly the same as the night we slept in it 30 years ago. Come on, follow me. Look at this.
It's a tube of toothpaste. I'd recognize it anywhere.
Yes, but it's your toothpaste.
Oh, that is thoughtful of you, Mary. I'd hate to change brands after 30 years.
Oh, no, no, you don't understand. It's not only the same brand, it's the same tube you used that morning. And this is the same bar of soap. Everything here is perfectly intact. Even the sheets on the bed are the same ones we slept in that night.
But where have you been sleeping all these years?
On the couch. I didn't want anything disturbed. I wanted everything just the same as when you left. So we could resume our lives together as if nothing had been interrupted.
That was very thoughtful of you, Mary. But where's the evening paper?
Tonight's paper?
No, the one from 30 years ago. Just thought I'd scan the obits.
Oh, that must be him now.
Him? Who?
You'll see.
Well, well. Mother always said I was the spitting image of my old man. Now I have the living proof. You are alive, aren't you?
Darling, I'd like you to meet your son. This is Courtney Jr.
You can call me Court, or you can call me what my friends call me. Son of Frankenstein.
You're not eating.
I've planned this dinner for 30 years, and he's hardly eating a scrap.
Oh, just not very hungry tonight. It's not the food. You know, dear, it's really not necessary to follow that old food chart of mine now that I've got a healthy ticker.
My first night at home after 30 years in the cooler, and she feeds me cottage cheese and a raw vegetable plate. The woman is mad. Quite mad.
Let's just leave the dishes and go to bed, darling. I'm going to slip into something comfortable for the night.
All right, go ahead. I'll be right up.
God, if only they'd left me in that tank for another 10 or 15 years.
You look very lovely, dear.
Poor thing. Primping like a schoolgirl. Can't she see what the mirror is telling her?
You haven't lost your charm. Or your taste for necks. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't look bad yourself, Dr. Grimshaw.
Bad? He looks marvelous in the mirror. And look at that old hag next to him. My God, I hadn't realized. What a fool I've been to think it could work. I look twice his age. Well, that's not surprising. I am twice his age.
It must be that 30-year beauty rest I've had.
She's right. I do look good. Or maybe it's just the contrast.
Well, I'm ready to call it a day.
Me too.
Good night.
Good night. Mary, you can't just pack up and leave a house you've lived in for 30 years. This is terrible. Think of what you're doing.
I have thought about it. I know what I'm doing.
But nothing has really changed. We can pretend it's like Well, 30 years ago. Everything in the house is just like it was then. You've seen to that.
Everything in the house with one exception. Your 60-year-old bride.
Well, maybe we can work something out. Maybe there's a way.
If you really mean it, there is a way.
There is?
Yes. And it's the only way.
Well, what is it?
Could you love me if I was your age?
Well, of course. Didn't I? 30 years ago?
Well, since it's impossible for me to be your age again, could you love me if you were my age?
Well, yes, of course I could.
Well, suppose I were to die today, say from an overdose of sleeping pills, would you be willing to wait 30 years for me, like I waited for you?
But, Mary, that would be insane.
Yes, it would, as it was for me. But would you?
Mary, of course I would.
Oh, Court, it's so much to ask, but I knew you would. I knew our love could never really die.
As soon as you're gone, I'll contact Ambrose. He has new techniques that are foolproof. We'll bring you back as good as new. But, Mary, are you sure? Are you willing to die just for me?
For us? For our love? Our undying love? Besides, I won't be dead. Think of it as my turn for a beauty rest.
30 years. I don't know if I can live that long without you.
Well, wait as long as you can. It doesn't have to be 30 years. I'll come whenever you call.
I'll save our toothpaste. And I promise not to change the sheets.
I came as fast as I could, Court. How long's she been dead?
It couldn't be more than a few minutes. I talked with her less than an hour ago. She seemed despondent, but I never suspected she'd do a thing like this.
Well, there's still time. We can freeze her and bring her back, just like we did to you. I'm sure that whatever was bothering her seemed insignificant when she's brought back to you for another chance at life. You know, Grimshaw, there's something beautiful about this. Sort of like, Romeo and Juliet. So let's get her ready. We haven't a moment to spare.
No, Ambrose. We must let the poor woman rest in peace. She was old and wretched and miserable. She'd lost her will to live. What good would it do to bring her back?
Well, we could wait 30 years, and you two could resume your lives and renew your love on even terms. There's a kind of poetic justice to that.
Wrong, Ambrose.
Oh?
It would be insane. She said so herself. She knew what 30 years of separation could do to a relationship. It was my mistake in the first place, and she paid a terrible price. We can't make her pay that price twice, can we?
No, I suppose you're right, Grimshaw. You certainly can't force someone back to life when they'd rather be dead.
I guess it's a new twist to an old story. Live and let live. Die and let die.
The Mutual Radio Theater is brought to you 5 nights a week at this time. Tonight's original radio play, Death Warmed Over, was written by Larry Tuvel and produced and directed by Elliot Lewis. Your host was Vincent Price. Our stars were Mary Jane Croft, Keith Andes, and Elliot Reed. Featured in the cast were Hans Conried, Bill Baldwin, and Corey Burton. John Harlan speaking. The Elliot Lewis production of Mutual Radio Theater is a presentation of CBI. Mutual Radio Theater has been brought to you in part by Serta, perfect sleeper mattresses and foundations, with the top comfort and deep support for firmness that feels good. And that's a healthy investment in yourself.
This is Cicely Tyson. Join us again tomorrow at this time for another portrait of people in love and sometimes in trouble.